Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Women continue to pay the highest price as a result of gender inequality, discrimination, and negative stereotypes. A new United Nations report on gender-based violence shows that women around the world are far more likely to die at the hands of someone they know. On average, 137 women across the globe are killed by intimate partners or family members per day. The 2018 report looks at so-called honor killings, violence against sex workers, and even killing women due to accusations of sorcery or witchcraft. Closer to home, South Dakotans are providing shelter and assistance for victims of domestic violence in the ongoing quest to save lives and make the future better for our daughters and our sons. Christina Simmons and Linda Schroll are with the organization Working Against Violence Incorporated, or WAVY. Christina is the development director and Linda is executive director of programming. And they join us now from the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in SDPB's Rapid City studio downtown there. Linda and Christina, thanks for being here with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Let's tell us a little bit about, when you see these sort of international numbers, I'm guessing you are not surprised by them because of what you see right here at home. So tell us a little bit about WAVY and the work that you do. And Christina, maybe we could start with you.
Yeah, so we've been in the community since 1978. And initially, we worked with women. We were known as Women Against Violence. And then, as best practices changed across the state, and we realized that we need to be more inclusive with our services because anybody can be a victim of domestic violence or sexual assault, we started serving men as well and people of all backgrounds, and because anybody can be a victim. So we changed our name to Working Against Violence, and just last year, we've always helped men out of shelter, but just within the last year, we've been able to house men in our shelter as well. So we're an equal opportunity provider, providing a wide range of services at no cost to our clients.
Are you seeing, Christina, that there are more men who are victims of domestic violence now, or is it just that as best practices change and people become, there's a greater awareness that this happens to men as well and a greater need for services, based on that awareness?
I think it's a combination of both. As people find their voice and they are inspired by other people that are coming forward and feeling empowered to come forward as well. So we're seeing a combination of both an increase in violence and then also more men stepping forward to speak out and share their story that they are victims just as women are.
Right. We recently this week celebrated South Dakota's first coordinated day of giving, and WAVY was one of those organizations participating. And as we talked to lots of organizations and representatives on the show on Tuesday, many of them said, we'd love to be out of business. We'd love to not have a need for our services anymore, but that's not very likely right now. Linda, tell me a little bit about what kinds of cases you see, what kind of stories you hear on a weekly basis.
They're varied, but they all have a general theme, power and control, or sexual violence, which is just another rung on the wheel of controls to just of mechanisms abusers use to control their victims. So everything from women who are fleeing, the majority of our clientele are women, to children who have been abused, to males, anywhere from 18 is the youngest adult that we will take to, the oldest client we've had so far was 84. So it's just a wide range. Currently we have 50 women and children in shelter.
50. Where do you start? What are some of those first conversations, those first questions? Because people are coming to you and there's a whole story that you may not know, or it might be somebody that you've seen before who's coming back. So tell me about some of those initial conversations. Either one of you can take that question.
Initial conversations are basically just a listening, done in a listening, very informal manner, where our purpose is to listen and to validate and to find out what the client's needs are, what they've gone through, how we can help, what their goals are. We are very victim-centered, and they decide what the next step is going to be, and then we list a lot of different resources for them to help them meet the goals that they have. So it could be anything from, you know, the immediate thing that we need is medical treatment. So that might be the first thing. It might be having law enforcement, if that's what they choose, to come and make a report. It might be offering safe shelter. It might be looking at other safe options for them. It might be transportation out of the area if they their danger level necessitates that they go somewhere else. It might be helping with employment or safe housing. It's a myriad of issues, and it's personal to each one, and that's where we work, one at a time.
Many people might sort of tell their story initially not to law enforcement or not to people who are, you know, working to help them, but to a close friend or a colleague or a sister or brother or somebody. For those who don't work on a regular basis with victims of domestic abuse or domestic violence, what are you listening for? What are the signs that someone has a problem, and how do you sort of help connect them with the services that they need? Christina?
Well, first thing is listening, stepping in. If you hear something or if you're suspicious of something, then step in. Again, domestic abuse and assault are about power control. That a perpetrator is going to take complete control over the victim. That means they go through a cycle of kind of a honeymoon period where they're grooming their victim or survivor and, you know, showering them with gifts and then slowly stripping them of their identity. Start, you know, I don't want you talking to so-and-so. I want to spend more time with you, and slowly cutting them off from family and friends. So there's a big isolation, and then all of a sudden they've taken control over financing. All of their finances, and so it could be a myriad of issues, and they take advantage of victims, and they're very, very smart about it, and so it's a slow burn for sure. And so a lot of people say, well, how did you not see this? Well, because it's a slow grooming process. And a lot of times the victims can't see it, and then that's where a lot of the shame comes in, is they don't want to step forward because they're like, how did I not know? And we need to take that, you know, push that aside and stop putting the blame on the victim and actually putting it on the perpetrator. Instead of saying, how did you allow this to happen? Or why didn't you leave? We need to say, why did this person abuse you?
Yeah. Or why did you go back? That right. has to be. Talk a little bit about how hard it is, you know, in many situations to actually leave a situation, to take control of your life again, and to not end up in the same place that you were before. Talk a little bit about the courage and the resilience of some of these women and men.
It's amazing. These women and men are extremely resilient. They may come across very fragile, which they are in a fragile state, but they are some of the strongest men, women, and children that I know I have ever personally worked with, and I know Leet and Linda can agree with that as well, is... the average times that it takes a victim to leave their perpetrator is about 7 to 9 times. So it's not uncommon for us to see a lot of the same people coming through our doors, and we don't judge. We get them back on track again and find out, you know, you talk about safety planning and other things that's going to help them be successful on their journey, whatever that may look like for them. So that conversation of, why didn't you leave? We've got to change that conversation.
So I want to interject here, because when you say, you know, the average is 7 to 9 times, and flip that based on what you just said before that, which was that means that the perpetrator of this has, you know, continued this 7 to 9 times mm-hmm. as well, even after knowing that this person is trying to leave. The perpetrator is like, got you back, and mm-hmm. now here's more. That really paints sort of an insidious picture of what's going on in the mind of the people who are perpetrating the violence.
Mm-hmm. So they know what they're doing, and it's whether it's, you know, well, I've got your pet, you know, they can use different things to lure their person back into the household or wherever they're at. And they can use different mechanisms like kids or, I have a stable home for you to stay in. So you got to think, if your identity has been completely stripped and then starting completely over, it's difficult.
Mm. talk about the intergenerational impact or the impact on children who are, you know, because a lot of people might say one of the reasons they don't leave a bad situation or an increasingly deteriorating situation is because they're worried about the kids. And, you know, they don't want the kids to have to be alone with this person, and that sort of narrative. Talk a little bit about how domestic violence in the home impacts children.
Well, absolutely, it impacts children. We know if you look at ACEs study, and we know adverse childhood experiences, which experiencing domestic violence definitely is, it creates trauma for the child. And we know that the more trauma that a child has experienced, the more likely they're to experience further trauma. So having children in a home where domestic violence is happening, not only does it confuse them as far as what the norm is and what those roles are and how they should act, it definitely influences not only if they're going to become further victims themselves or perpetrators. It's a huge trauma.
As I look through this United Nations report for 2018, I'm astonished at some of the, you know, what's happening around the world, but then I'm also encouraged by the efforts that, you know, you at WAVI and other people throughout South Dakota, and if you go on the website for SouthDakotaGives.org, you can look on, you know, domestic violence organizations, you know, people throughout the state who are working to prevent this. You both are part of this really international effort to change things for women right where they're at today. Christina, do you get that sense of mission on a day? I mean, this is hard work that you and your staff and volunteers are all doing. Do you have that sense of purpose and mission that you feel like you're making progress?
It depends on the day and the hour, right. Honestly. But we're all very dedicated to the mission of WAVI to work to create a safer community. We're all very passionate about our jobs. A lot of us have been affected by domestic violence, either as a child or an adult. So we all connect with our clients as well on a personal level. So we really are empathetic and compassionate with our clients. And you know, we can better have a better understanding what they may be going through. So those partnerships and in the mission across the state we're all working together. This is not a one organization or one person mission. We rely on the community. This is a community issue. It's going to take a community to heal.
As an adult, as you talk with adults, whether it's volunteers or staff or yourselves or other adults who have sort of survived being a child in one of these, what are some of the ways as an adult that domestic violence and exposure to it as a child comes back to you as an adult?
Well, I can speak personally. My mom was raising five kids, and we stuck around because my dad was, he was a father of all five of us, but he was very abusive. It was a very volatile home environment. I grew up thinking that was normal. And finally, you know, and I remember going to a shelter, my mom taking all of us to a shelter, and you had to know somebody that knew somebody where the shelter was. And thankfully, we with advances in technology, we want people to know where we're at and that it's a safe and secure place to be, and that parents can come with their children, then they're going to be safe because their safety and security is first and foremost.
Not everybody, and I don't know how your siblings have processed, you know, the transition into adulthood and looking back at their childhood, but not every sibling sees the situation in the same way, and that can be difficult too, to sort of cross that, you know, that threshold of memory and how some people don't want to face that was part of the reality.
Yeah, I can tell you, I thought I had healed from it. And then working in this position, there was a lot of traumatic memories that came back. Yeah. I was dealing with some PTSD that I didn't know I had. And so I had a lot of personal healing with that as well. But this position has helped me heal. And I'm very grateful for where I'm at and the people I work with every day.
Yeah. Linda, how can we all be supportive of each other? Because you don't know people's stories. And sometimes, you know, somebody might be going through something or have been through something in the past that, you know, isn't going to come up in a water cooler conversation? Are there ways that you find that your work with these women and men have changed just how you deal with, you know, strangers, people that you don't know, people on the street?
Absolutely. Basically, the first thing is just to become educated, know about domestic violence, understand it. You know, when you think that domestic violence is such a unique crime, because it's not something, it's not an accident, it's not about being in the wrong place at the wrong time, it's not, a national disaster, it's committed by someone, it's not committed by a stranger, it's committed by someone you're in a relationship with or someone in your family, by someone that you trust, by someone that is supposed to love you, and by someone you love. So knowing that, understand the dynamics, understand that that person that maybe is late to work, you know, maybe that's a conversation you need to have. You don't know what's going on in their life or about why they're late. The person that is wearing clothes that maybe it's long sleeves and it's hot, or, you know, they have injuries and they're telling you, I fell down, or I hit the door, or, you know, whatever it is, and it doesn't really make sense. Or the ones that have are scared to be in a room with the opposite gender, or have to leave right away, or staying late is a huge issue, or childcare. All of those things are things that if you know about and you're aware, you're much more likely then to step up and have those conversations. For all of us, it's basically about, it happens everywhere. It happens across the world, across our nation, across our state, and it happens here. It happens in our community and in our homes, and it's up to all of us to stand up and say something, do something, lend a hand, whatever it is. It's up to us to create those safe spaces for conversation and for shelter and for healing. To stop this, we need to start by changing our societal norms, and stop the. Our men need to step up, and we're lucky in that a lot of them are. But stepping up and changing the way we think.
I think that's brilliantly said. Thank you so much. SouthDakotaGives.org. You can find a link to Wavy. You have a direct website where people can donate or look at volunteering. Where can they find more about you, Christina?
Yes, you can go to www.wavi.org. There's information about domestic violence and sexual assault on there as well as upcoming events, and if you would like to donate as well.